Hi. It's great to be here. I feel like a rock star. It's the only time in my life this is going to happen, so I'm going to make the most of it. I'm just going to read a little bit from Tipping the Velvet. Not that kind of bit, unfortunately. This is just from near the beginning. I thought because we had a gallery, I'd read a kind of musical bit. So this is just from the beginning, where Nancy's the main character. It's set in the 1880s. She's gone to the music hall and she's about to see a male impersonator, Kitty Butler, for the first time. Of course, we'd had male impersonator turns at the palace before, but in 1888, in the provincial halls, the Masher acts were not the things they are today. When Nellie Power had sung The Last of the Dandies to us 6 months before, she'd worn tights and bullion fringe, just like a ballet girl, only carried a cane and a billycock hat to make her boyish. Kitty Butler did not wear tights or spangles. She was, as Tricky had billed her, a kind of perfect West End swell. She wore a suit, a handsome gentleman's suit, cut to her size and lined at the cuffs and the flaps with flashing silk. There was a rose in her lapel and lavender gloves at her pocket. From beneath her waistcoat shone a stiff-fronted shirt of snowy white with a stand-up collar 2 inches high. Around the collar was a white bow tie, and on her head there was a topper. When she took the topper off, one saw that her hair was perfectly cropped. It was the hair, I think, which drew me most. If I'd ever seen women with hair as short as hers, it was because they'd spent time in hospital, prison, or because they were mad. They could never have looked like Kitty Butler. Her hair fitted her head like a little cap that had been sewn just for her by some nimble-fingered milliner. I would say it was brown. Brown, however, is too dull a word for it. It was rather the kind of brown you might hear sung about, a nut brown or a russet. It was almost perhaps the colour of chocolate, but then chocolate has no lustre, and this hair shone in the blaze of the limes like taffeta. It curled at her temple slightly and over her ears, and when she turned her head a little to put her hat back on, I saw a strip of pale flesh at the nape of her neck where the collar ended and the hairline began that, for all the fire of the hot, hot hall, made me shiver. She looked, I suppose, like a very pretty boy, for her face was a perfect oval, and her eyes were large and dark at the lashes, and her lips were rosy and full. Her figure, too, was boy-like and slender, yet rounded, vaguely but unmistakably, at the bosom, the stomach and the hips, in a way no real boy's ever was, and her shoes, I noticed after a moment, had 2-inch heels to them. But she strode like a boy and stood like one, with her feet far apart and her hands thrust carelessly into her trouser pockets and her head at an arrogant angle at the very front of the stage. And when she sang, her voice was a boy's voice, sweet and terribly true. Her set lasted no longer than the customary 15 minutes or so, but she was cheered and shouted back onto the stage at the end of that time, twice over. Her final song was a gentle one, a ballad about roses and the lost sweetheart. As she sang, she removed her hat and held it to her bosom. Then she pulled the flower from her lapel and placed it against her cheek and seemed to weep a little. The audience, in sympathy, let out one huge collective sigh and bit their lips to hear her boyish tones grow suddenly so tender. All at once, however, she raised her eyes and gazed at us over her knuckles. We saw that she wasn't weeping at all, but smiling, and then suddenly winking, hugely and roguishly. Very swiftly, she stepped once again to the front of the stage and gazed into the stalls for the prettiest girl. When she found her, she raised her hand and the rose went flying over the shimmer of the footlights, over the orchestra pit, to land in the pretty girl's lap. We went wild for her then. We roared and stamped, and she, all gallant, raised her hand to us and, waving, took her leave. We called for her, but there were no more encores. The curtain fell, the orchestra played, Tricky struck his gavel upon his table, blew out his candle, and it was the interval. I peered, blinking, into the seats below, trying to catch sight of the girl who'd been thrown the flower. I could not think of anything more wonderful at that moment than to receive a rose from Kitty Butler's hand. Thank you.